Troy Rank, our Denver 7 insider, presented by Rocks Heating and Air. Troy, welcome to the show. James Merrillat is filling in for Brandon Stokely today. There's a lot of moving parts going on right now with the Denver Broncos. How are you keeping up with things? And, you know, give us the latest on what we need to know about this GM search.
Yeah, no one's interviewed yet. That's the next step in this, the Zoom interviews. They've got several candidates, including Champ Kelly, Fontenot from the Steelers, who just interviewed with the Falcons, their in-house candidate, Stark. Yeah, they're going to end up interviewing probably 8, would be my guess. And those will be Zoom initially, and then we'll kind of get a better feel for it. But I would think at some point they want to mix in a veteran guy like Dimitrov or Rick Smith just to maybe protect themselves instead of, I mean, all the guys they're interviewing have never done the job. So I would want to think they would at some point mix in a veteran in the process. But right now, no interviews yet. But they are trying to move quickly because there's so many teams looking for GMs.
Hey, Troy, given the situation with ownership and then the news that came out earlier today that Joe Ellis will not be with the team after March of 2022, so 14 months from now, is that something that could scare away experienced GM candidates and maybe they have to go in a direction of somebody who's looking to make that leap? Because, boy, not knowing who your boss is going to be in a little over a year, that makes it a tough sell, doesn't it?
Yeah, it complicates it. I mean, Ellis said on the conference call, was it yesterday? It feels like a lifetime ago, you know, that he pointed to that March 2022 date. Remember, the NFL is not crazy with the way the Broncos are handling this right now. So it's not like Ellis could have stayed on in perpetuity. Like, the NFL wants resolution. They don't like the fact they're in litigation. That litigation in July, hopefully, you know, there is some clarity whether that validates the trust, and then they name Brittany as the successor and see if the kids will agree, or the kids say no chance, and then start the process of selling the team. But it wasn't like Ellis was going to stay on. That was never the plan. The plan was to name a successor, and then the owner runs the team. So, I mean, it's kind of weird. It's almost like Elway's situation where they're not moving on, but you knew this was going to happen, I guess. It was kind of inevitable. But regardless, James, to your point, if you're a veteran GM who's done this and you would take the job knowing Joe Ellis is leaving and John Elway, you know, likely could be gone after a year, and then new ownership comes in, that's a weird spot to be in. It just is. Now, maybe new ownership would give you a year because they don't want to blow everything up and try to start from scratch in that first year. So that's why it probably lends itself to someone with less experience that just wants to get this job on their resume. But it is a unique situation. They do have resources. It's not a terrible job. I'm not saying that. But it is complicated because of the unsettled situation and with Elway, Ellis, and the future owner, whether that's going to be the Bolin family or somebody else.
Troy Rank dropping by here on Stokely and Zach. Troy, thank you for your time this afternoon. The idea that is it more likely, less likely, the same likeliness that a guy like Justin Simmons or Von Miller are back with the Denver Broncos considering a change at general manager?
Yeah, Von's situation, I think it's pretty clear anyone associated with the Broncos in the front office, whether that's Elway, Ellis, Fangio, and Fangio would still be a part of this, obviously. They want Von to finish here, so that would mean in the very least they would like him to run it back for one more year, get him healthy, have him play with Bradley Chubb. You have Malik Reed. You'd have three pass rushers you really trust, with all due respect to Itachu. I think his situation, they will seek a solution. Simmons' one is weird to me because he does everything you want in a guy you've drafted on and off the field. He's a leader. He's been an all-pro second team. He's been Pro Bowl. He'll probably get all-pro again. And he leads in every way, locker room, community. I just don't understand why they're going to keep drawing lines in the sand with him. You know, I get it. He wanted to be Eddie Jackson money, 4 times 14.5, and they don't see him that way. Well, he's close. He's close. Are you really going to draw that line with him on a team that has so many underperforming players? So, but Simmons is complicated. And Justin, you could tell his frustration when he talked with us earlier this week that when the franchise tag was brought up, it was kind of like, yeah, whatever, I haven't thought about it. Like last year, he was like, yeah, if it's a franchise tag, I totally get it. I understand what they'd be thinking. He's not in that same mindset anymore. He bet on himself. He made the Pro Bowl. He wants a contract. And it's very clear. You know, would he hold out and all that? I'm not going to sit here and say that. That rarely, if ever, happens. The Le'Veon Bell case, you can just look it up. It's an anomaly for a guy to choose to hold out until the 10th or 11th week to then accrue service time. But Simmons' situation, to me, needs to be a priority. Because Vaughn, when Vaughn comes back, I've always been a Vaughn guy. Vaughn, to me, needs to come back as DeMarcus Ware and be used that way.
Yep.
Justin Simmons plays every down and has for 3-plus seasons. He is my priority. He is dependable and reliable. Could he be a bigger hitter? Yeah, I guess, but he's arguably your best player on a 5-11 team, and you're trying to find ways to not bring him back? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, Troy, and James, I just want to jump in here and say something to Troy that I said to you, James, just a handful of minutes ago. When you drafted Justin Simmons in the third round with the 98th pick, you hope that he turns into what he is today. Like, that's the hope. That's the goal, that he turns into a Pro Bowler, all pro, and is a great guy to have in that locker room. That's who he is. And a year ago, I did not agree with resetting the market for Justin Simmons or handing him, you know, a fill-in-the-blank type of money, whether it's, you know, Eddie Jackson, Budda Baker, Kevin Byard, Tyrann Mathieu. I was like, I think he's a really good player. I don't want to pay him like he's a special player. But then he had the follow-up act of 2020, and that sort of validated that thought. And I've pivoted on this conversation. Is all that make sense, Troy?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they should have paid him last year, but I understood where they were coming from. Back it up, do it one more time, and he did. And I mean, and you said when they drafted, they hope he'd become this, a third rounder? I mean, you just hope he's going to be a decent starter. So I think he's lived up to his end, honestly. And I just don't know, when you give money to Glasgow, you give money to Juwan James, you give money to Menelik Watson,
right,
Stevenson, I could go down the list
right,
of guys.
Right, right.
You basically put money into a fire pit, and now you're squabbling over dollars over your guy. That's the part that doesn't make sense. And that does resonate in the locker room. We give money to free agents that have proven themselves here, and our guy that we asked to do everything, he's in a contract issue. That doesn't go over well. And then you gave it to Bowles, which good for him. You gave it to him based on 10 games.
Right.
I mean, I just think at some point you got to be realistic of the optics of this, that if you're going to find a way not to pay Justin Simmons, okay, then you got to start defending some of the guys you are paying.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And another thing that doesn't make any sense is when you mentioned that Vic Fangio is going to be involved in these decisions. I mean, he's a head coach who's 12-20. He's in over his head in a lot of regards, clock management, in-game decisions, whatever the case may be. It's like Jeff Spicoli hiring the new principal. Why on earth is he involved in this GM search, and how much of a say do you really think he'll have in the final decision?
Yeah, listen, I give him more credit as a coach than you do because I know how the players respect him, James, as a kind of a professor. But he hasn't proven himself as a head coach. I'm talking just as a football guy.
Fair enough.
There's respect there. But as a head coach, they haven't been over 500 once in 2 years.
No.
And he's going to be involved with the hiring his boss? Really? The argument's been made to me is that you'd want him involved because it is kind of a unique situation because of the reasons we outlined earlier. You want him to be comfortable with the guy because you're trying to get back on the right track next year, not Vic hire, you know, that there's a GM that has no relationship with him, doesn't like him, and then next year is a wasted year. So I get having a comfort level, but Vic told me when I asked him, you feel more or less secure with the guy hiring you no longer is the GM. And he's like, you know, I can work with anyone. I pride myself on that. I do believe that, given his history in the NFL. Then that being the case, make him adapt to the new GM. You got to make sure the new GM like doesn't have it in for him, obviously. But Vic trying to find the GM that suits him, based on what?
It's so backward.
This is what I don't understand. It's backward. Like, it's all these Patriots assistants that get hired. They're not Belichick. They're not Brian Flores. Okay, one guy who's really succeeded. Well, Brian didn't. Josh McDaniels didn't. Go down the list of guys that don't. Joe Judge. I'm not sold on Joe Judge. Like, it's like they're treating Vic as if it was 2016 and the Broncos had won the Super Bowl. In that case, okay.
Right.
I want him involved. But it just feels a little backward. And that's not because I don't respect Vic as a football guy. I do. He sleeps it, eats it, drinks it. But that's different than being the walk around coach who commands the room and is a leader in that way, the CEO type coach. If that were Vic, I would say absolutely he and the GM have to figure this out. But it just, to me, it's like I hired the GM, the best one, and then Vic's got to adapt to him.
Yeah, Troy, that was well said, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, and then on top of that, and this is maybe just a little bit of recency bias, but the fact that Week 17 ended the way that it did, like right on Vic's plate, and just in such disastrous fashion, and it was on him, and that was the lasting impression that bookends a year with that's how it started on Monday Night Football and against the Titans, and that's how it ends against the Raiders. You know, just from an optics standpoint, not good, not good at all. I'm fascinated about what's next here. Are you getting any hunches? Are you starting to get any hunches for? And I know they haven't done the interviews yet, so this is a little bit premature. But are you getting hunches on a guy that you think could have the inside track on this thing?
Not yet. I mean, Champ Kelly's a guy that they like and that players who were around when he was with the Broncos absolutely love and advocate for him. The in-house guys, Stark, you know, they're high on him. I would be hard for me if you hired in-house. It's just to say that's a fresh set of eyes would be a really difficult sell. Nothing against the candidate, but that would be a difficult sell. I mean, so Kelly, I think he is kind of on a short list, even though there isn't one yet. But until we get through these Zooms, I just don't know, and start getting through the back channels of what are these GMs being told. I do believe that Elway won't meddle. I think once they get through the off-season training camp, that's not been Elway's, you know, love to be the grinding guy, finding guys off the waiver wire, practice every day. So I don't think that's going to be the issue. That GM, though, has to trust that, you know, John isn't going to meddle. And, you know, it's one thing to, like, be in a guy's shadow literally and then, figuratively and literally. They've got to give this person independence and authority, or this has no chance to work. And the reason I say that is the GM then needs to be able to tell Vic, you got to figure out this clock management stuff. We're hiring an analytics guy. It can be someone you know. We're not dealing with this again next season. As you grow into the role, we've been to fix that before. We're going to do preventive medicine on this. We're going to do preventive medicine on the special teams. I want you to go to McMahon and suggest this. If you're not replacing him, we've got to do these three things differently. Like, there has to be a voice in the room to say, you hired me because you were 5-11 and have missed the playoffs 5 straight years. You wanted a fresh set of eyes. You want to hear my voice. You're not going to like what you hear. That's part of change, and it's uncomfortable, but that's what they need. They need the independent audit to say, hey, this isn't working. And if we're going to not fire a bunch of people, that's fine. Then we've got to change how we do business.
Right.
So I would hope that this new GM is authoritative and comes in and says, hey, you promised me this. I'm holding you to it. And here's some of the 5 things that have to change starting from day one.
Troy, I'm with you on that. Couldn't agree more. And it's KKFN, KKFN HD1 Longmont Denver. In terms of John's role here, I get the sense that it's going to be fairly large when they first hire a new GM, kind of helping with the transition, showing him the ropes, and it'll slowly but surely get less and less and less. And by the time the season rolls around, I don't know that we see much of John. I don't know that he's at every single game. Like, he's going to be kind of a, you know, figurehead and an absentee one at that. Do you see it that way? Do you see this as, hey, come next March, he's completely done? Or is this a role that, you know, he's going to embrace and maybe a long-term thing? How do you kind of see John's, short-term and long-term future with the organization here?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you that initially he is going to be involved and he is hiring the GM. He's the main, he and Joe Ellis and then Vic Fangio in that order, really, in terms of hiring the GM. So that's part of, you know, being involved in, quote, big decisions. He'll be involved, is my guess, with Von Miller. He told me he would when I asked him about it. But once they get through free agency, I do think you're going to see it changed where it's like, okay, the roster's kind of complete. Here's the new GM kind of taking over the day-to-day operations of this. And I agree with you. I think John will be around, but he isn't, I don't think he's going to want to be in a situation where, you know, every fifth day shows up at the office and, you know, like, I just don't see that. I see him transitioning to liking this new role of semi-quasi-retirement. And that's how he's kind of talked about it. Spending more time with family, golfing more, being able to have more flexibility with his schedule, all things you can do when you don't have to be involved in the day-to-day operations. So I think he is going to take advantage of it. And maybe it does end after a year and then he's just John Elway Broncos legend, and he's around, but he doesn't have an official title anymore. He will always be associated with the Denver Broncos. His legacy is safe. He is the Mount Rushmore. But I do think that this new GM, I don't think Elway meddling is going to be the hard part for the GM. The hard part for the GM is getting a better roster and getting a coaching staff that can get the most out of that roster to get you to where you're playing meaningful games in December. People keep acting like they were close. They missed the playoffs by 6 games in a 16-game season. Like, I mean, if this were the Rockies and you took the name off that, you'd be like, that's a 72-win season.
Yeah.
They were close.
Yeah.
That's how bad, I mean, to me, because I covered those teams for 15 years. It's not close. It's not, that's the old, if Tulo and Cargo play 162 games and our 5 starters all have career years, we're going to the playoffs. Yeah, okay. Let me know how that works out. Like, that's why I'm saying this new GM, the issue won't be Elway for me. The issue is going to be you got to get like 4 or 5 really good players and you got to coach them up and get to the point where you got a quarterback that can keep you in games to where you're at the end of next year, you're hopefully around 9-7.
And that's it feels lofty right now, you know, from 5-11 to getting to 9-7. Not saying it can't be done, but you just hit on the last question I wanted to ask you before we cut you loose here, Troy, and thank you for your time this afternoon, the quarterback spot. What do you think, and I won't hold you to it because it's way early. We don't even know who the decision maker is going to be on this topic. But if I asked you now, just on January 6th, what do you think is the more likely scenario? Starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos week 1 in 2021, Drew Lock, a veteran, or a drafted player?
I'd give the slight edge to Lock. Literally be like a pick'em if there were a line. But I'd give Lock the slight edge because Fangio's familiarity with him, Shermer's familiarity with him. And I will say that. I give Lock the slight edge if it's a normal offseason. If it's not, I think it would be a veteran. And they would just say, hey, veteran, you know, get us through. But I sense right now, again, like you said, it's January, so this is not written in stone, that Lock would be the starter with a veteran that could beat him out and or save them when he's having a bad game. Someone you would trust to bench Lock during a game to come out and win a game. And again, whether that's Dalton, Dalton could beat him out if they got Dalton. But let's say Fitzpatrick, Minshew, you know, that group of guys, Brissett, I don't know that they would beat him out. I think Dalton would beat him out if they got him, and they would give Dalton kind of the opportunity to beat him out. But right now, as we sit here, I would say Lock has the slight edge. I like a lot of things about Drew. People think I don't like Drew. I like his leadership. I like his humility. I like his work ethic. He's just got to get better at what he sees in the middle of the field and be able to make and not turn the ball over. It's really that simple with Drew. And I just don't know anymore with Drew. Is he just that quarterback? Is he just inconsistent because he likes to take chances? And at Missouri, it was great against Vanderbilt, you know, against Kansas's of the world. When you're doing it in division and against the Raiders in Las Vegas and you turn it over 4 times, you can't win.
Right.
Like, you can't win that way. And he finished with the lowest completion percentage of any starting quarterback. So he's got to get to 66, 67% completion percentage, and he's got to be 2.5 to 1 touchdown to interception. And he finished at 11-5 over the last 7. So there's progress. But it's got to be better for them to have any chance to compete next year.
Troy, you're the best, man. Happy to have you on. Another new year. We turn the page. There are so many moving parts. And I know just how many different things we'll know between now and the next time we talk next Wednesday. So best of luck with your coverage, man. And we'll talk to you next week.
Guys, see you.